This week's What's Brewing show is brought to you by Audible. Audible has a large selection of audiobooks and audio entertainment, including Audible Originals. Audible keeps you informed, inspired, and entertained using the Audible app that you can use to listen to your library on almost any device. Anytime you can't read, you can listen to Audible. Audible members get more than ever. Every month, you can get one audiobook at any price. That's a big bargain. Plus, you get two Audible Originals from a curated selection. And the best part is you get to keep your library forever, whether you have a membership or not. Start listening today with a 30-day Audible trial. Choose one audiobook and two originals for free. Visit audibletrial.com/whatsbrewinshow. This week's recommendation is The Secret History of Star Wars. Mike, Jamal, where are we going tomorrow? Actually, today?
That's Wookiee for the ArcLight.
Yeah, we're going to see the end of the saga. We're going to see Star Wars tomorrow. And one of my favorite books that I listened to of the last couple years was A Secret History of Star Wars by Michael Kaminsky. And this really was just a it's like an audio documentary of how Star Wars kind of became an idea. George Lucas, it's a really cool biography about George Lucas and his early life and into his early point of filmmaking, and then how he kind of thought of Star Wars and brought it to life. And then after he created Star Wars, how he kind of just had to keep reinventing it to get Empire Strikes Back and the Return of the Jedi. And then when it came, you know, and then it went away from the movies for a while, and all of the saga of making it, and how he really didn't know what the hell he was doing when he started making it. He had no idea how it was going to end. And he kind of retconned the entire Star Wars universe three times over. And it talks about all the consistencies all the way through the series, and then all the inconsistencies all the way through the series. Now, this book was written a number of years ago, so it only covers the first six movies. This doesn't have anything about Force Awakens. It doesn't have anything about The Last Jedi or any of the newer stuff, right? But if you are a Star Wars fan, I can't imagine how you couldn't find this book amazingly interesting, and it's terrific, and it's a really good Audible listen, because the narrator listens just like a podcast does. So The Secret History of Star Wars, that's the Audible recommendation. And of course, you join Audible, you get a free 30-day Audible trial. Visit audibletrial.com/whatsbrewinshow.
This is Maurice Jones-Drew, and you're listening to the What's Brewing Show.
All right, his name is Hannah, and he's here to talk about recruiting. It's Michael M. Hannah, and that is at Michael M. Hannah on Twitter. And let's just play his theme music.
His name is Hannah. That's right, Michael Hannah. And he's going to tell you about recruits. What's up? Michael Hannah.
It's been a solid 28 hours or so of feeling myself.
Hannah, it's great to have you on the phone again, and it seems like it's too few and far between now, but how are you doing tonight? I know it's been a long night for you as well, but how are you doing tonight, and if you could give your temperature on the Bruins, are you hot or lukewarm or cold, or is it like sub-zero for you? Where are you at?
I'm doing well. It is a long night, but I mean, always fun to talk to you guys, and always make time for that. And I'm probably, whatever the halfway point between cold and lukewarm is, that's probably where I am.
Okay, well, that makes sense. I mean, that's better than where you usually are.
Yeah. I mean, if you would have asked me at the start of the season, I probably would have been sub-zero. So, I mean, that's better than that at the very least, right?
No, absolutely, man, absolutely. So the Bruins, kind of, they certainly improved where they were last year recruiting-wise, but certainly there are things to quibble about. If you're just to give an overall, in a vacuum, if you didn't know anything about the Chip Kelly era or how they have been, you know, struggling to recruit, and this was just a typical, or this was just a UCLA class, and you had to assign just a letter grade to it, coming in 24th in the composite and, you know, fourth in the Pac-12, where would you assign that letter grade?
I'd probably say C+. The reason why is not because of the quality of the class. Like, you can live with a top 30 class if it's coached up and you kind of get the player development part of it right. Like, if we had said top 30 last year and top 30 this year, I mean, the talent base would be considerably better. Like, that part is okay. It's not perfect, but you can work with it. It's the, just the complete imbalance of the class that makes it kind of a bit untenable. The overemphasis a year after basically ignoring the linebacker position, except for what John Ward and Noah Keeter who transferred out. I'm saying Hayden Harris yet because I just don't know what he is. Now they overcompensated in a huge way, and now they're going to have basically a three deep that's going to be three quarters true freshmen. That's just, the imbalance is just kind of out of whack, and just the lack of beef on the lines is concerning to me. But they did solve a need. They needed linebackers, and boy, did they get them. What are we at? I think we have 9 linebacker commits right now, and if they get Bodie Schoonover to flip from BYU by the next signing day, they would have 10 linebacker commits in a class. Like, that's just bonkers.
Okay, well, and I think that's totally fair, dude. But now, if you were to grade this class on a Chip Kelly's been there for 3 years, and of his 3 classes, is this first or second or third in those 3 classes? Where, how would you rank it like that?
Second. The last class was just so bad.
But, yeah, no kidding, right?
Yeah, the last class is just unacceptable for UCLA's.
Indefensible.
Hold themselves to completely indefensible. I was going to say just like the UCLA defense, but the way that they play is indefensible, but they are not themselves indefensible. I mean, you guys kind of see what I'm
talking. Oh, no, I got you.
I would say that the first class that Chip brought in was so far, far and away the best one. It was a fairly balanced class. You had a lot of kids who the kind of groundwork had been laid by Morris staff, and Chip kind of took the baton and ran with it. He had a lot more goodwill amongst recruits, still had that buzz and that kind of mystique among recruits. Like, dude, that's the guy who made Oregon a juggernaut and had that awesome offense. If we get in on that, then it's going to be just crazy times. I mean, that's how you get a guy like Kaz Allen to commit on the spot. That's how you get guys like Chase Cota to commit, like, literally 2 weeks after Chip takes over. Brian Addison, even though he had to leave the class, but he joined the boat before he got off of it. Like, all that kind of stuff. That first class was a solid foundation lay. Last year was a giant egg that they laid, and this year is somewhere in between.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely fair, too. Hannah, you're doing a good job of not being super pessimistic, and I love you for that. But the same token, like just because the Bruins are back in the top 25 of recruiting doesn't mean that there should be, like, rainbows flying off everywhere, right? So they bring in what they brought in the most quantity is all these linebackers, right? And one of them has an awesome last name of Trojan, so that's going to be an interesting jersey. One of them committed and decommitted and then committed again. One of them is a 4-star surprise for me, but I know he was kind of in the pipeline. He boomed a while ago, and then they unveiled it today in Damian Sellers. But of this linebacker group, who do you think is going to be the most likely to play early, and who do you think and if it's different, who do you think is going to be the best of the bunch?
I think the answer to both of those is Damian Sellers.
Okay.
And it's not just because of his recruiting ranking, it's what he does in terms of his skill set that fills just a huge need for this defense, and it's his ability to get to the passer. Now, I'm not going to say that he's going to be Anthony Barr in year one or even in year four, quite frankly, because Anthony Barr is, you guys are probably going to, I don't know if you have or haven't discussed wherever you have. As you guys have probably mentioned about Anthony Barr, and as we're talking about on the B team right now, Anthony Barr might be the best Bruin of the last decade.
Darn
if
right.
Not the one of the top 2 or 3. I would vote for him for number one.
Yeah.
Him or Kendricks. But Damian Sellers, in a way that UCLA has not had since Tack McKinley, can get to the quarterback. He has the speed, he has the athleticism, he's got the moves, he has the track record in high school. He had 5 sacks in his state championship game this year. Like, the kid can get to the quarterback, and I don't know if he's going to have more than 3 or 4 sacks as a true freshman. If he just blows up, that'd be amazing, obviously. But by the time he's done at UCLA, I think that he is going to fill a huge need in terms of kind of bringing back UCLA's one-man pass rush that it has been lacking for a very long time.
No, that's awesome. And, you know, it was cool to see, you know, the one little blip on the, you know, on the recruiting Twitter they got this today. It seemed like it was because of that commit. But they got some other guys, too. Miles Jackson, you know, we're kind of worried that he, you know, after he committed and decommitted and committed again, that he was going to be out of here again. What do you think of him? And does he have a chance to turn into somebody good, do you think?
I think he does, because he's got really, really nice athletic attributes, like his spark score. If any of your listeners know that term, the score that they do at the opening regionals, where Nike tests out like your Powerball throw, your 40 time, your
right.
shuttle time, and they combine it in like one composite athletic ranking. Like, he had an insane spark score. Like, he was just a really, really not uber freak athlete. Like, he's not like your Anthony Barr, just 99th percentile everything, but he is certainly an upper crust Pac-12 athlete, and that is something that UCLA was sorely missing in its linebacker core this year. Now, obviously, you need to refine his skills, and especially with what UCLA is projecting from him as a Mike linebacker when he played defensive end essentially with his hand in the ground in high school.
Oh yeah.
That's something that's a transition that will take a little bit of time to kind of hone those skills. If they follow through on it, if they try to play him at that rush end, him and Damian Sellers is like a combo, number one, number two, or even at each outside linebacker position, I could see that working out a little bit more, because I feel like his current skill set's a little bit more suited to it, and he can make an earlier impact that way. But he has the athletic attributes where if he gets a refinement in terms of the football skills that go along with that athleticism, he could make an impact at UCLA for sure.
Okay, so, you know, I want to kind of go into the trenches for a minute here. And the Bruins get four guys across the offensive and defensive lines, all of which are under, I want to say, 250 pounds. But big, tall guys, right? 6'3", 6'3", 6'4", 6'5", and whatnot. But of these guys, and one of them's even a transfer, so he's, you know, he's an older dude. Do you think, you know, am I correct in assuming that for the most part, these guys are probably not going to be ready to play from day one next season? And correct me if I'm wrong. But number two, you know, at this point of the Chip Kelly era, and with what we've seen from the defensive line and from the offensive line, you know, kind of a real up year 2 years ago, and then kind of a weird year this year. Do you have faith that this staff can mold these guys into the players that they want them to be? That they're obviously getting them a little bit on upside. But, you know, do you still kind of believe in the staff and Justin Fry and all this, and on the defensive side too, for them to make these guys into what they want them to be?
I mean, you see flashes for all these players, guys like Osa Odighizuwa, Antonio Mafi, Chris Murray was solid in his true freshman season, even though he took a step back as a true sophomore. But then you had like Sean Ryan and Duke Clemens, who were both like a bit overmatched, but at the same time, were kind of the less weak side of the offensive line as true freshmen. So there's a lot of youth on the offensive line, especially it's not a great excuse, because you still do have three experienced starters in Murray, Tagaloa, and Burton last year, and all three of them seem like they regressed last year. But at the same time, you do see talent coming up in the ranks on the offensive line in terms of Clemens, Ryan, Murray, if he can get things back together. Burton, he's going to be in his senior season. John Gaines, if he can ever put on the weight. And you kind of go to Alec Anderson as kind of a swing tackle right now. Like, you have guys who are playable, if not elite. Justin Fry definitely did a great job his first year at UCLA under Chip. Last year was a bit of a step back, like you said. I am, I guess I would say, cautiously optimistic, because, I mean, his track record at Boston College with more developmental guys did end up working out. Like,
yeah.
he was able to turn low three-star kids into first-round picks eventually. So I'm not completely out on him by any stretch of the imagination, but at the same time, next year is a proving year for the offensive line. You have four returning starters, two of whom are going to be upperclassmen. The other two are going to be, what, your two or three top-rated recruits from the 2019 class, and you're going to have just the left guard vacancy to fill, I think. So at that point, if that starting five is not gelling and they have experience playing together, that's where I get to be a little bit worried. But
And guys like Patrick Selna and Bruno Fina, who they brought in this class, can't be counted on for reinforcement because their official listings from UCLA, and these are the numbers where UCLA published them, 247
yeah,
and 140 pounds respectively.
That's like, crazy. I outweigh these guys. That's crazy.
Yeah, that's they're too like to play tight end for UCLA right now.
So yeah.
Imagine them playing tackle for UCLA next year. Like, these are kids who are 3-4 years down the line. So we shall see with Justin Fry. I loved what I saw the first year. Last year was disappointing. If they can get back to that that year one, not magic necessarily. I mean, you went 3-9 that year. There's only so much magic you can contribute. But at the same time, where you have a clear upward trajectory in the development of the offensive line, that's when I'll begin to be a lot more encouraged again.
No, and I totally agree with that too. And I mean, I think if you squint and look at this year, you can come up with enough reasons why it wasn't as successful as the year before. But it's like, you're right though. For all the reasons it didn't work this year, it had better come around and be much better next year, just because theoretically you have some more consistency and these guys are older and all that. So I hope that's correct. Now, on defense, still just stick to the last couple guys, the defensive backs that they got. One of them was a four-star, a local four-star guy. What do you think of these guys, especially John Humphrey?
John Humphrey is definitely the crown jewel of the secondary class. DJ Warnell from Texas, I think he's going to be a swing guy between corner and safety. I'd probably project more at safety. You have Jake Newman, who I think is going to end up at linebacker. I think he's going to go into a linebacker because they need more of those in this class. Same thing with John Vaughn's, actually. If you guys aren't putting him as linebacker on your list, I would, because he's already at 230 pounds. He's not playing safety in college.
Yeah.
So out of the three guys that I project to start out in the secondary, Newman, Wardell, and Humphrey is by far the catch in the class, and he had a great senior season at Pasadena Mirror, and has all the physical tools, kind of the like lanky build with the long arms, the fluidity, all the physical traits that you look for, and he is somebody who I could see actually getting into the rotation early next year, especially if the defensive backs start out the season with you cross your fingers and hope it's not the case, especially when you're playing an air raid offense like Hawaii in game two.
Oh, yeah.
But if the defensive backs are as bad as they were, even close to as bad as they were last year, then I think John Humphrey could jump some of those guys. I could completely see it.
It's just a sorry, sad prospect to think of too. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess we'll see. Now they bring in a quarterback from New Hampshire, it sounds like Brock. I told the guys on the main show, Brock Osweiler the second, or is this like Travis Wilson? It sounds more like the first than the second. But what do we know about Parker McCorry?
Parker McCorry is a composite four-star, 24/7 or a little bit lower. Rivals had him in their top 250, so there's a bit of a difference of opinion on him. There are physical traits there in terms of just kind of elusiveness in the pocket. He doesn't have a cone for an arm by any stretch of the imagination, but the ball can get down the field. There's a little bit of a windup, and it kind of hangs a little bit. But my worry with Parker McCorry is that he is a guy who looks like a quarterback and can play quarterback, but needs to learn how to play quarterback. And what I mean by that is,
yeah.
He's not somebody you can expect to play next year, in my opinion, just because he is coming from New Hampshire level high school football. But on top of that, and competition level, that's certainly not the greatest. But the more worrying thing is that he just didn't get enough reps, in my opinion. He started for his school, but this was a school apparently that ran an offense that was very, very run heavy. And his average stat line, from what I can remember, is something like 7 of 12 for 86 yards a game.
Or something. Oh, wow.
Like that's what it was in the middle of the season. I don't know if it picked up from there. I haven't checked. But it was a very run-heavy offense. And it, I think it was a school that actually won whatever their state title is or whatever. But McCorry wasn't counted on to do too much. He is somebody who earned his ranking from kind of camp performances and like what he – can be with refinement, but that is somebody that you can't expect to be a solid contender on the depth chart for a couple of years. So it remains to be seen. And I think Brock Osweiler, if he turns into Brock Osweiler in college, that is actually a best case scenario, in my opinion, because his senior year at ASU is pretty solid.
Oh, darn right. I mean, he's in the NFL for a reason.
A while to get there for Brock Osweiler. Brock Osweiler coming from where, like Montana or Idaho or something like that, it's almost a perfect comparison in a way.
That's funny. Yeah. Well, and to your point, Hannah, senior year, 54 for 92 for 930 yards. 9 touchdowns and 2 interceptions. So yeah, I mean, that sounds exactly as you described it. So I guess the good news is that the Bruins don't need a quarterback necessarily for next year, unless they got some crazy, transfer story. But do you think that they need to go out and get another guy for the following year, or is one of these guys that are in the stable going to be able to take over for DTR when he's leaving?
Being completely honest, I do not have confidence in any of these guys being Pac-12 level quarterbacks.
Yeah, because I know you don't like Chase Griffin that much either, right? I mean, they're just as far as like, not that you don't like him, but you don't think he's ready.
If you put Chase Griffin's brain in Colson Yankoff's body, you could have an elite Pac-12 quarterback. Unfortunately, that's not the case. So you have a guy who needs to learn how to play quarterback in Colson Yankoff, and you have a guy who knows how to play quarterback but can't get the ball there in Chase Griffin. So
yeah,
you have imperfect solutions.
Yes.
Austin Burton, I don't think, is a Pac-12 level starter, even though he's a perfectly fine backup and kind of caretaker.
Totally agree.
Jerry Neuheisel 2.0 on our podcast, on the B Team podcast.
Oh yeah.
Parker McCorry, I do not see being a starter level kid until like his redshirt sophomore year at the earliest. I think 2021 they're going to have to hit a home run in quarterback recruiting, because they very well might need a true freshman to start, and if not, they are going to have to bring in a grad transfer to kind of be a Band-Aid option for a little bit. Or if they get really lucky, Bryce Young doesn't win the job at Alabama, looks to transfer, and magically ends up at UCLA, and all things are solved at that point.
Yeah, it's funny, Matt. You stole my next question. I was like, so were they recruiting Bryce Young this year late just to try to get him to transfer in a couple years? You kind of already answered that question. It's a shame. You've already detailed on this show and on your show how they kind of bonked that one up. But we can just look at it and say, just what a shame, I guess, right?
Yeah, shame indeed. But I don't think they were recruiting him just to get into transfer.
Well, I was joking, but yeah.
They legitimately liked him. It's just, this is a kid who had national level offers from Alabama, from USC, from Oklahoma at the end of his sophomore year. Even though he wanted to go to UCLA his whole life, he wasn't going to wait on UCLA at that point. His family was set on an early commitment because the idea for them was UCLA offers and he rides it out with UCLA.
Yeah.
And there's no need to worry about other offers from there. He's committed as a junior and a senior in high school. He doesn't have to worry about recruiting anymore. And UCLA not offering is actually what led to a lot of the drama in his recruitment, because there was just uncertainty at that point. USC just kind of unstable. They don't like what's going on with they like the offense, but they don't like the quarterback depth chart. They don't like that Keaton Slovis stepped up this year. He's going to be competing with JT Daniels. And then at Alabama, it's far from home. He's a kid who might get homesick. He ended up going with Alabama because he has a better chance to start there next year.
Yeah.
But there was no perfect option when UCLA really would have been if they had just stepped up with an offer after a stellar sophomore season in high school. But Jim Moore's staff thought he was too short. Chip's staff was skeptical on him because they don't offer sophomores for some reason, and they also thought he was a little bit short. So, yeah, it's just unfortunate.
Yeah.
But if he transfers, all is well.
Yeah, I guess we'll have to see. Okay, Hannah, I know you've had a long day. I'm not going to keep it too long, but they got some skill guys on the offensive side, running back or two, and then a bunch of wide receivers, including a couple 4-stars. What were the bright spots from those skill dudes?
I love Logan Loya. He is one of the 4-star receivers that they brought in. A kid from St. John Bosco who was at Orange Lutheran before that. He is a kid who just tore it up in the CIF playoffs. In that game, that legendary game against Modern Day, he was the go-to guy who kind of was just slicing up the Modern Day defense. And that's a Modern Day team that's D1 kids up and down. So, I mean, Logan Loya was making a serious impact. He is a crisp route runner. I mean, I hate to use these terms for a wide receiver, all these like sneaky fast, good route runner, all that kind of stuff. But he really is kind of all that. So,
it's okay, Hannah.
I mean, it's unfortunately stereotypical, but it kind of is what he is.
Yeah.
But we saw this year with Kyle Phillips that UCLA can do a lot with that kind of a wide receiver. So him, Logan Loya backing up Kyle Phillips next year, you will have consistently in that slot position that receiver who can get open and can pull off 10 to 15 yards at a time and even break up a big play every now and again, because he's just so crisp and so good at finding the holes in the defense from his route running. So Logan Loya is the one guy to watch out for. Matt Sykes, really nice receiver from Hawaii, a bit of a bigger kid, but Logan Loya is the one that I'm just like, okay, that dude is going to kill it at UCLA.
That's fantastic. Now, in we already talked about it. You gave the class overall like a CC plus or whatever. The big giant biggest gaping gaping hole in the class from your perspective, or what's keeping it from being a better class? What do you think?
Offensive line and defensive line. I'm going to use because you guys are bro-affiliated now, I feel like. Tracy Pearson had a wonderful article that was called Where's the Beef? And that's exactly right. Where is the beef in this class? Even the beef isn't that beefy. It's like a very lean cut, like filet mignon offensive lineman. So, they needed more on the offensive line. They needed more kind of plug-and-play offensive linemen. And on the defensive line, I'm telling you, the staff, I don't believe, understands class spacing, because they're going to be bringing in 9 or 10 true – it's going to turn out to be, once these kids grow into their bodies, 9 or 10 true freshmen or 9 or 10 linebackers in the same class. Now, there's going to be a couple that redshirt and it spaces out that way. But you have on the defensive line, going into this season, you are only going to have 2 underclass defensive linemen if they don't bring in any more in this class, kids who are sophomore or below. So – they are going to have to, in 2021 and 2022, seriously just load up on the defensive line. And my fear is actually next that they just do this every year, where for as long as they're here anyway. They're like, oh, we need this position now. We're going to sign a bunch of true freshmen, and they're not going to be ready for 2-3 years, but they're going to be the ones who fill out the depth chart in the meantime. And it's just going to be this consistent imbalance, and it's going to drive me crazy. But we'll see how it goes. They need to make it 2021 defensive line recruiting needs to be a priority.
Okay. And last recruiting question for you, then I just have one more thing for you after that. But Do you think it's a problem? I know Woods was kind of hitting on this on the Twitter sphere, the last couple of days. But do you think it's a problem that, or how big of a problem do you think it is? I think we all know it's a problem. How big of a problem do you think it is that so much of this recruiting footprint is not California and it's just from across the country sort of thing, and a bunch of guys that aren't from here, so that you're kind of opening up the danger of, like you said with Bryce Young, they're going to get homesick and they're going to want to go home. How big of a problem do you think that is for the Bruins at this point?
I think it's a huge problem, because, I mean, you haven't had like a wave necessarily, but you've had, like, for example, Matt Alemo, who was a tight end from New Jersey, ended up transferring out after his freshman year. And the idea behind it was, I'm just really homesick. I'm going to go back to New Jersey. I'm going to play for the worst Rutgers team since like the early aughts, because I literally just can't stand to be far away from home. And you're going to have a few of these kids over time who are just going to be like, I kind of like living in California, but I want to be close to my family more. The biggest thing about recruiting locally versus recruiting out of state is that if you are a school that's located in Los Angeles and the majority of your class has to come from out of the area, then that is an indictment on your ability to kind of lock up your kind of hometown. And it might say something more about how people in your hometown perceive you, that you have to go out of state and find kids who are willing to come to UCLA because of basically they aren't as close to kind of the unpopular let's figure out the right way to say it.
They're not cultivating the right relationships, right? They're not cultivating the right relationships within their community.
It's not even about cultivating the right relationships. There is a lot of that, but it's basically, I don't want to use this term because it's too strong. But it's similar to like the Howland type of stink that was on them. Like, there is this perception of UCLA as the not cool school to go
gotcha.
To in LA.
No, that makes sense.
And they can't really shake it. And it's not going to change until they win in a big way. And then at that point, you create buzz. But if you're a team if you are a staff that is trying to recruit in Southern California and you have no pizzazz at all, but you combine with no pizzazz with no winning, they're just going to avoid you completely. And at that point, you have to appeal to kids who are out of state on lifestyle and stuff that is kind of different from what the local kids would perceive. They look at out of state, they look at UCLA differently because they think LA, they think big media market. They think that this is a place where I can go and live and kind of be comfortable. Here, there's no like real appeal to it, because it's like, I'm in my backyard, it's UCLA, what's the big deal? There's really nothing there that fascinates me necessarily, that captivates me.
Yeah. No, and that all makes perfect sense. And it's like, it's on one hand, I want to be you know, we were just looking for any sort of positive out of this last season. And it's like, well, you want to say, well, at least the recruiting is taking an uptick. But at the same time, it's like, well, geez, I hope that next year they can kind of sew up these problems, because they do seem like to be glaring problems. Now, I lied to you. I have two more things. Number one, last recruiting thing is, we were talking about all decade sort of stuff on our show this week. For you, who's the biggest recruiting bust for the Bruins from 2010 to 2019?
Mike Juarez.
Mike, where are you? Yeah, okay. And why do you give him the nod over Jalen Phillips or Snoop Sun, which were the three that we came up with, and we were, you know, those are all three were our major candidates.
Snoop Sun was never a four-star prospect. It's because his name was Broadus. The only reason he was recruited by anybody is because his last name was Broadus. Like, he had skills, but he's very clearly, his heart was not in the game.
Yeah.
Like, you could tell that in high school. There's a reason why he had to transfer to Las Vegas, because his dad's heart was in the game more than his. That's why Long Beach Poly didn't want him. That's why Sarah didn't want him. That's why all these, I'm not trying to trash a kid. I mean, it's just the truth of the matter. Jalen Phillips is up there with Mike Juarez. The difference between them is that,
one saw the field.
What's that?
One of them saw the field.
Yes, exactly. One of them was at least remotely productive in his time at UCLA before he fell out of love with the game.
Yeah.
Mike, I don't feel like ever gave himself the chance to be somebody who made any sort of impact, just because it was pure drama from the beginning.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, Mike stands out to me more.
No, and it's funny too, because those are we split. We split on Mike and Jalen Phillips, but it's just like the biggest recruits in UCLA history turn out to be like their biggest bust too, and that just kind of tells you right where the failings of UCLA had a lot to do with that too. I mean, oh man. Last thing for you, Hannah. Number one, where are you at with? You know, obviously we don't have any control over this. Nobody does. But where are you in hoping for changes to the defensive staff, first of all, or changes to anybody on the staff, first of all, other than Kelly?
If I was going to go down the staff, I would say that Dana Bible has to go, because he's not recruiting the quarterback position very effectively. I mean, Parker McCoy coming from across the country is one thing, but you also have Chip's connections in that state that spoke loudly for him, and Dana Bible didn't have to do very much. And DTR's development to this point has been so up and down that he's better than he was as a true freshman, but he is not a division-winning quarterback for UCLA yet. And there's something to be said for his lack of reps, that he's still developing, that he's still new to the quarterback, relatively new to the quarterback position. How much of that can you put on Dana Bible? But I feel like you can find a quarterback coach who can keep the depth chart stocked in addition to developing people. And DTR should be a little bit better than he is right now, in my opinion. There's too many plays where he's just airmailing the ball. There's too many games where DTR comes in and he's just kind of like caught up in his feelings and he's not ready to play quarterback in that game. And I feel like a lot of that is just coaching about how to kind of be not professional about the whole thing, but building up a certain type of mentality. So Bible is one that stands out to me. Let me see. Vince Ogobasi on the defensive line just does not recruit. He's an NFL. He's a guy who needs to be in the NFL. He doesn't want to recruit. He doesn't care about recruiting. He just doesn't need to be on the college level. He's a perfectly fine technical coach, but he does. He's not made for the college game. And man, I don't want to say Paul Rhodes, because Paul Rhodes is somebody who last year I thought was really good, but the 2019 season was not the finest year of Paul Rhodes' career.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I'll give him one mulligan, but after next season, if it's not better, then there's a serious problem. And there's going to be a change that needs to be made there. And obviously Jerry Azzanaro, if you want to convince him to become the defensive line coach and find a DC over him, that might be the best option for everybody. But Jerry Azzanaro is not a Pac-12 or Mountain West level defensive coordinator. He's not a defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
He's a line coach who needed that title to get lured from Cal. We gave it a go. It didn't work out. Everybody can kind of say it was what it was. We'll just go our separate ways and best of luck to you. Or if you want to coach the defensive lineman, be our guest, but we need somebody else who is designing the scheme and calling the defensive sets and plays and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And it's funny too. And I've kind of come to a place, and I know this is not necessarily the most, I don't know if it's the most rational standpoint, but it's like, I'm in a circular place of, I'm still choosing to believe that Chip Kelly is a good coach in some respects. and that they hired him to do a job, and that if he thinks this is the way that he's got to win, then I'm okay with him either hiring guys or firing guys or whatever, but I'm not going to clamor one way or the other. But at the same time, if he really has lost it, then I don't want him to make any changes, because that will then accelerate the end, and then we can just kind of, you know, let him crater and then be done with it. But either way, it involves me not worrying about who he's got on his staff or whatnot, because it's either going to go one way or the other. But I know that doesn't make the most sense, and it's not good for someone who for a fan who wants to really sink their teeth into it.
No, you're not. I mean, you're not wrong in that logic. Like, there is something to be said for, you hired Chip Kelly to beat Chip Kelly. You need to let him be in whatever the Chip's fault they do.
Yeah.
But and that was hard in the pun and not intentional.
That was a good one.
What was I going to say? Yeah, there is something to be said for letting Chip do it his way, because you hired Chip Kelly to do it his way. And you're right. If it is just the wrong approach to everything, then the sooner it's done, the better. But at the same time, I guess I'm thinking about it. I'm somebody who likes to think long-term about a lot of stuff, but I just can't shake this idea of I have to watch this team for the next 2 years.
Oh, yeah.
And having to live through two more as a narrow defenses that might be like 2019 is just something that I just don't want to do with my life.
It's a pretty brutal prospect.
So it's that balance of kind of maybe we just need to kind of let him burn it to the ground and run his course, kind of like a virus. Or, I mean, that's a harsh comparison. But
apt.
The alternative is, we kind of have to live through those years. So yeah. Long-term versus short-term, I mean, there's only so many ways that you can frame it and kind of come away even remotely optimistic.
Oh, there's no doubt. All right. Well, Hannah, you're always very giving with your time, and I truly do appreciate it. You are Michael Hannah of the B-Team with your good buddy Nathan Eberhardt, the formerly number two podcast in UCLA football. Now we'll say tied for number one, but that's okay. You guys have like an all-decade tournament going on. That has not wrapped, I'm correct in assuming, right? You guys are like in the semifinal for that thing?
The quarterfinal voting just ended. The semifinal is going to be Anthony Barr versus, I need to remember who is on the other side of the bracket, Josh Kelly.
Yeah. Oh.
Josh Kelly is going to the semifinals, which is just crazy to me. Yeah. So it's Josh Kelly versus Anthony Barr in one semifinal. And then the big one, the other semifinal, Miles Jack versus Brett Hundley.
Oh, my God. These are all my favorites. How can I choose? I'm not gonna. I can't choose any of those. I mean, oh my gosh, it's so good. How do people vote on that, dude?
They go to our Twitter page, and the quarterfinal voting just ended, but the semifinal voting will start soon. Just keep going to twitter.com/UCLABteam or at UCLABteam if you're on Twitter. Just make it easy, and you log in and you vote that way. But you're also able to email us. You're able to send us messages on Facebook. Just get in touch with the show however you need to. All our contact information is online. And you're able to basically put in your vote manually. We will tally those as well. So even if you are not on Twitter, you can still get in touch with us if you are dead set on making sure that Brett Hundley is the Bruin of the decade, or that Anthony Barr is the Bruin of the decade. If you think that Josh Kelly's performance against USC was so amazing that he's better than Anthony Barr, Brett Hundley, and Miles Jack, that's up to you if you want to let us know. However, if people can't get in touch with us, please do and vote in this.
Oh, and some of my favorite B-teaming of the last month was you, when you guys had to talk about how Josh Rosen lost in his matchup. And then I'm trying to remember, Nathan is so into Tack, right? That's his guy, Tack?
His guy would be...
No, was it Tack or was it... Anyways, Nathan was really, really fixated on somebody else that lost, and it was pretty good, potting. But and one more plug for the B-team. If you, of course, need any stocking stuffers, of course, your manscaping needs can be fulfilled. Just listen to the B-team. They got a great podcast for a ball shaver, so that's a good thing, too.
I mean...
I love you, Hannah.
I'm trying to find some classy way to throw stocking stuffers into that. And
yeah.
Wonderful. Manscaped, for as much as they're paying us, they're getting so much more free exposure out of this just because of the hilarity of how bad we are at doing the Manscaped ad reads, because they're just absurdly uncomfortable to read.
Yes, and I enjoy every minute of it.
That way on purpose, but... Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing to me that we got the Manscaped ad and you guys got the Audible ad, considering like the two stereotypes of the show.
Yeah, you know, that works, and it's fine. It's okay. I know.
it's just crazy. I mean, I by the way, I love Audible. I have an account with them, so I'm. It's really cool to me that you guys are working with them. It's just the Manscaped ads with us have taken on a life of their own. Like, I think Chris Osgood is like keeping like a success rate for our ads and stuff. Like, we got a lot of feedback last week because we compared having. Being smooth down there to being smooth up there, like one of Mick Cronin's assistant coaches.
Yeah, that was good. That was that was a very strong metaphor. So that was good stuff, buddy.
Yeah, so yeah, the Manscaped dads have taken on a life of their own for the show. It's been funny.
It's been fantastic. Well, his name is Michael Hanna, and Hanna, once again, thank you for joining us. And I want to talk to you as we get into the new year. Maybe talk about any kind of stragglers they pick up in the class. We'll see how it goes. So thanks for joining me. I know you had a long night, so I really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure, buddy, always.
Good evening.
Try us tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel.
It's got to be in or out, Mom. In or out. Well, I need the door closed.
Size doesn't necessarily matter if you want it hard enough.
Thank you for your cooperation.
The final word is boob.